Right, this is week five in Bridging the Gap, and this week we're going to talk about change through Musar. So I did hear somebody ask the question earlier just as I walked in, does learning Torah change you? Right, was that your question? How did you phrase that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Does learning Torah change your character traits?
Good. Does learning Torah change your character traits? So that's an excellent question and the perfect segue into this class, because learning Torah by itself doesn't, but Musar practices with learning Torah does. So that's what this is about. How do we make the Torah that we learn affect us? Because it is possible to learn Torah without changing our character traits. The study of Musar and the practice of Musar is all about changing character traits. So that's what we're looking at this week. I'll wait for you to sit down. Okay. All right, now that you sat down, I actually want to do something a little different to start off this week. So everybody take off their coats and find somebody you don't know very well who's in this room. So go stand or sit next to somebody you do not know very well.
And take off our coats.
Well, take off your coats if you're hot. I'm getting warm and I see people are just settling, so... Find somebody. Okay, keep your coats on.
Repeat the questions.
Please repeat the questions. I will work on it. Okay. Everybody be my boss and make sure I repeat questions. Find somebody you don't know very well and sit next to them. One-on-one. One-on-one. Well, I think they're sitting next to each other.
Oh, are you guys?
Yeah. They're going to talk to each other. It has to be, yeah. You have to be close enough that you can... Talk amongst yourselves for just a minute, and then I'll give you your assignment.
All right. Did you care
okay, here,
yeah,
I'll go here. You guys go here. Okay, so and I don't know
okay, yeah, we'll do that. That's
fine.
Yeah,
more
all right, I'm ready.
Does everybody have somebody?
Do you have Jan's?
I think we met at Jan's.
Okay, does everybody have somebody you don't know very well?
Yeah, that's true.
No. Two. It should be one on one. One on one.
Oh, you are. All right. You guys know. So okay, whatever.
Okay. Does everybody have? Well, it needs to be one on one. Just two people together. Do you have somebody? Is everybody paired? How does that work then?
We're paired.
So is it odd? So come over here. You'll do it with me.
Here we go. There's three pairs right there. Now.
Wait. Is he? But he's still odd, right?
Barry's odd.
Okay. No problem.
Well, no, there shouldn't be.
Wait. Yeah? Is it odd or even?
You're paired.
Yeah, we were paired.
Oh, well, can one of you pair with Jim and one of you?
It has to be just one-on-one, not no groups of three.
I mean, I know you,
but not
okay. Complicating. Here comes one more person. Is your wife coming? Two more persons. All right, but those two, do you know each other? Well?
My brother from my other mother.
Okay, well, we want to match up with people you don't know well, so we might have to just switch around a little bit.
Why are we laughing as we walk?
Okay, we're matching people up with people you don't know very well. Find somebody you don't know very well. If you have to break up a pair already, but pair up with somebody you don't know very well.
Oh, I have to break up a pair?
You might have to if you only know the person that's left over. Okay, so come on, guys, switch around and let's make our pairs, whoever you don't know.
I can go with Barry enough.
That or somebody you don't know as well. So just switch around. There's people who don't know you, right?
As well.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. You two are you two together?
Yeah.
We're really, so are we doing like twos?
Yeah, twos. We want twos. Does everybody have a two?
No.
Okay, so you guys switch up. Okay, good. Excellent. Okay, here's your assignment. Okay. Go back. No. That was the prerequisite. Go back 10 years, okay? So right now, it is...
Jim doesn't have a pair.
You don't have a pair?
No.
Okay, so come over here. I'll do it with you. But everybody else has a pair, right?
Where am I coming? Where am I going?
All right, over here. We'll talk.
Do you know?
10 years.
No, he doesn't. Okay. That's good. So that way it won't be boring for the people on the recording. Anybody who's listening to it on the recording, do this out loud in your own, wherever you are. Okay, go back 10 years. So what's today? It's December 7th, 2000. 1999, okay? December 7th, 1999. So just back to, it doesn't have to be December. December-ish, whatever, 1999, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, introduce yourself to the person who's across the table from you. Using current language, right? Don't say 10 years ago I was. Hi, I'm Aliza Bulow. I live in Long Beach, Long Island. I have 6 kids. The oldest one is about to start high school. Okay, so use your present language. 10 years ago, okay? And just introduce yourselves to each other.
Are you talking about, like, providing some biographical?
A little bit, yeah, just a little bit. Just like, where are you? You're 10 years ago? Just introduce yourself to the other person 10 years ago, okay? Okay. You can start.
Hi, I'm Jim Jacobson. Got 2 kids. My son was just bar mitzvah this month. My daughter's 10 years old. I guess this is an elementary school, middle school. We live in Greenwood Village.
What do you do?
I'm a lawyer.
A lawyer?
Okay. My wife is Jane. She wasn't working then.
Okay. Okay. And I'm Aliza Bulow, and I live in Long Beach, Long Island. I have 6 children, ages 13 to 5, down to 5. So the youngest one just started school this year. I babysit for 2 kids full-time as well. So I really have 8 kids under my purview full-time. And my oldest is looking to start high school next year. So I'm trying to figure out what high school she should go to next year. My husband's a lawyer. He works in Manhattan. Leaves the house around 6 a.m., comes home at midnight, so the child care is mine, right? I give a shiur once a week, and I go to a shiur once a week because I love to learn. And I teach on the phone for Partners in Torah also. So. Okay, switch. If you guys didn't switch, switch yet. The other one. Did everybody do their introductions? Okay, I'll let them have 1 more minute. I'll let them have 1 more minute to introduce.
Didn't get home till midnight?
No. Manhattan lawyers, that's one reason we moved here. It's crazy. You sell your soul. It was really crazy. Sometimes he'd come home at 11. Sometimes he'd spend the night with his parents in Manhattan. Yeah, yeah, it was very long hours.
Yeah, we were thinking about moving to Philadelphia, which is where I'm from. Moving back there, I interviewed some law firms. Most of them said that they work, lawyers work till at least 10, at least 3 or 4.
Right, right. That's what it is. And so since we lived on Long Island, it's an hour and a half commute after you finish working at 10. Right, so you're pulling in at 11:30 or midnight. Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. Right, smart. Okay, let's end this part right here. Okay, so 10 years ago, you just introduced yourself. Okay, now I want you to think ahead. Think ahead. 10 years from now. 10 years from now. Reintroduce yourself. 10 years from now. This is a little harder because you're not actually using, you're not drawing on history and on experience. You're really drawing on fantasy. And it can be whatever you want. It could be where you think you'll be or where you really wish you'll be. Whatever you want, whatever paradigm you want to come from. But introduce yourself, who you are, in 10 years.
Wow.
Okay? All right? Go. Okay. I'll let you start.
I'm Jim Jacobson. I live in Greenwood Village, Colorado. Married to my wife, Jim. 2 kids who are both grown up.
Are they married?
Hopefully.
And are you a grandfather?
Not yet. I haven't been married that long.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe soon.
Thinking more about my mortality than I consider it now, although I'm starting to think of it now.
I'm a lawyer.
You're still working?
I'm still working. Maybe starting to slow down a little bit. Still working.
Any major accomplishments, trips you've been on? 10 years from now. Big cases you've won.
Hopefully I have a lot more.
more clients, and the economy's doing better.
Okay. Well, I'm Eliza Bulow. I live in Denver, Colorado. Probably. It would be nice if I lived in Jerusalem. But for sure in 10 years. So I am now the author of several books. And I have many grandchildren. All 6 of my kids are married, and all of them have children. All of them are feeling good about where they are, good places in their marriages, and interacting nicely with each other, friends. Some are closer than others, but they all enjoy each other as adult children. And my husband has transitioned out of law into something else. Let's see, what has he transitioned into? Probably into business. And maybe some consulting. And since I'm fantasizing, he also teaches history at the local university because he loves history. So my husband teaches history as a hobby, and he has transitioned out of law and is now a businessman. And I've written my books, and I'm still working the way that I do, teaching Torah and across the country and in Israel too. What else am I doing in 10 years? And I'm working on another book, trying to figure out technology. It's a little hard to keep a pace, especially now that I don't have teenagers anymore. You know, they used to keep me fresh, but now I have to seek them out to learn how to use all the new stuff. Pardon? Right. Right. And we're constantly being bombarded with it, so for sure there's going to be new stuff. We just don't know what it is, right? How to use it. And I'm healthy. Right, I'm 55, so 55, I'm healthy, I'm writing, I'm learning, I'm teaching, having a great time with all my grandkids. I like to see my kids living nearby, so most of my married kids live nearby. Yeah. Good, okay. Yeah, yeah, that's nice. Add that in, yeah, yeah. All right, I'll give them another minute. Okay, I'm going to clear this off because you're going to need space. Okay. Bring it to a close. Okay, everybody have their blue sheet of paper? If you don't have one, please take one. Pass one around. It's something to write with. And turn it over to the back, please. You don't have anything to write with?
No,
didn't bring a pen. I have one extra pen. There you go.
European babies. Oh, thank you. I'll give them.
Okay. All right. Now, on the back, just draw a straight line across your page the long way. And put your birthday on one end. Right on one. You don't have to put the year if you don't want to. And yet, you know the year, so. And this is your personal sheet of paper. You do not have to share it with anybody. Okay? At the other end, you could put after 120. Just write, after 120. So we know, yeah, so we know, everybody in this room, we know two things for sure. Everybody here was born, and nobody here yet died. So we all have a birth date, and we all have an after 120 date. We don't know what that is. Somewhere in the middle of this line is today. No. Right? So just without analyzing, you do not have to figure out exactly, but somewhere, just like make a mark for today. Somewhere on the line, make a mark that represents today. This line is not in real time, so you do not have to be worried about where your line is. Okay? But somewhere is today. Okay, now, everything that's in between your birthday and today is history, right? You already lived it. There's no changing it. But everything that's in between the line that you just drew and the future is the future, right? And there's two options with the future, right? You can let it happen, or you can make it happen. That's up to you. So you get to decide what you want to do with your future. It's completely up to you. There is nothing that stands in the way of what you desire. There's nothing that stands in the way of what you desire. There is stuff that stands in the way of what can actually happen, but nothing can stand in the way of your desire. You can wish for anything you want. So make sure you're wishing for what you really want. Right? Think about, what is it that you want? And do you really want it? One thing I learned in my extremely short, Baruch Hashem, stint in Amway. I was in it long enough to learn that this is not for me, okay? A tiered marketing system. It's all duplicatable, right? You have to learn how to give their classes. But one sentence I learned from them, which actually makes sense, is if you want to make a change, you have to make a change. Right? It's just as deep as the Stephen Covey thing that I said before. Stephen Covey says, the main thing is to keep the main thing, right? Which is also profound in its simplicity, if you think about it. The main thing is to keep the main thing. It's good if you know what the main thing is, right? So we can, for everybody, the main thing is something else. But for everybody, it's just as true that if you want to make a change, you have to make a change. So I'll just give a weight loss example, since that's something that I live with, right? So I'd like to make a change. I'd like to be, I don't have to be at 8. I wouldn't mind being a 12. That'd be nice, right? But if I want to make a change and be a 12, that means I'm going to have to make a change. It means not eating cake for breakfast. I really like cake for breakfast. I don't really want to give that up. It is what gets me out of bed. That's the thing, right? Good memory. So what will I do? But if I want to make a change, I have to make a change. Maybe I could still have cake, but then I'll have to start exercising. I don't like exercising. But I can't just keep looking in the mirror thinking, oh, I wish I was a size 12 and not make a change. Because if I want to make a change, I have to make a change. Right? Change isn't going to come without a change. So if you want to make a change, you have to make a change. So think about how you introduced yourself 10 years from now. And you can change that. Just because you chose to introduce yourself one way right now doesn't mean you're not going to think about it on the ride home or tonight or tomorrow. Who do you want to be in 10 years? I'll bet if you think about who you are right now, you're a lot different than you thought you would be 10 years ago. Right? The person that you introduced to the person across the table from you, who is different than who they thought they would be? I personally am on kind of the same trajectory, but I wouldn't have envisioned exactly this. So I probably would have envisioned, I'm still giving classes in my living room, learning with people one-on-one, but I wouldn't have envisioned that I'm a regular teacher, and not just in Denver, but around the country. I wouldn't have really thought that. So I am different, although it's something I really wanted. Nothing stands, I really love learning, and I love sharing. I love teaching. It's what I desire. I desire to learn and grow and share it, and share my process, and help other people in their process. So that is my desire, and that's what drives me. I don't obviously have that big a desire to be a size 12, because if I had a big desire, I probably would be. It's not so unattainable, but it's not such a strong desire, so it's not something I'm working on. What about when we desire something, but we don't really desire something, right? Like that, right? So there's, we can have will unification problems. What is that? Right? So let's say our higher self desires something and our lower self does not. Whether we want to call that our soul and our body, or our higher soul and our lower soul, right? Sometimes they don't desire at the same rate. And really what we need to do is to get our lower soul to desire it at a higher rate so that the two wills can be unified, so that nothing stands in the face of will. If we really want something, we can often make it happen. Things fall away in the face of very strong desire. Right? Look at the civil rights movement. Right? That was a strong desire that changed the face of America because people really, really felt strongly about it. And they took it into their own hands to change things. So, and there's many examples where people do want something badly enough that they make changes, the changes that are necessary to make something happen if you really, really desire something. But sometimes you don't. Right? So let's take something. What's something, does anybody want to volunteer? Something they want? Yeah, what?
Mm-hmm. I like learning. Mm-hmm. I like this sort of, you know, dressing up. Mm-hmm. I really don't like services at all. Mm-hmm. But I would like to get to the place where I could keep the Sabbath. I think it's a good thing to do if mm-hmm. you're a Jew and you want to be on the good side of God. And
okay. Okay, so let's talk about it for a minute. So the higher part of you wants to keep the Sabbath. The lower part of you doesn't feel like it. What's the block that the lower part is experiencing? Why aren't you doing it?
Well, I got stuff to do.
You have stuff to do.
And I want to, you know, catch up.
That's inconvenient.
I don't want to just waste the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I get bored.
Mm-hmm.
And just sitting around doing nothing,
mm-hmm.
I want to do something
mm-hmm.
and be productive.
Right. So what's getting in your way is that you feel bored. You have stuff to do that you want to accomplish. So taking the time out of accomplishment seems daunting to you. To take a seventh of your life and say, I will not be accomplishing during that time,
especially
accomplishing my list.
Considering that I sleep 20 years.
Right, so you sleep a lot of your time too, right? So you're sleeping a third of your time.
Exactly.
And then to take a seventh of your awake time
right.
and take it off of your time where you can accomplish things on your to-do list seems very daunting, not something you're interested in doing.
Right.
But your higher soul, why does your higher soul want to keep the Sabbath?
Because I think, you know, I mean, God's been very nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a God. I felt God. I felt that he's touched me. And I believe in the Ten Commandments. And one of the commandments, it's a, you know, one of the big ten.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you believe in God. You want to be in a relationship with God. You take it seriously. God said to do it. You take that seriously. And so you're in conflict. Your higher soul and your lower soul are in conflict. Because your lower soul, really the lower soul, whether it's the body, so it depends. Sometimes it is the lower soul and sometimes it's the body, but the lower soul is myopic. The lower soul seeks pleasure. The higher soul seeks pleasure too, but different types of pleasure. The higher soul is seeking the pleasure of a relationship with God. The lower soul is seeking the pleasure of accomplishment of stuff, right? So really what you have to do to get these two together, because the lower soul is pulling you back, right, is you have to get the will of the two unified. So a technique for unifying these two wills is to put glasses on the lower soul. Help the lower soul see why it's going to get pleasure out of participating in the higher soul's program. Right? Why is it going to be worth it? So accomplishment, right? Let's just take the word accomplishment. Accomplishment is a problem. You've figured out that one of the reasons that you don't want to do it is because you feel like you're not accomplishing. Maybe you need to think about what do you want to ultimately accomplish? When you get to the end of that timeline, where it says after 120, what do you want to have accomplished? A lot of stuff. Your garden should look good. Your clothes should be organized. Your packages should be sent. Your birthday should be recognized. Or your soul has been improved to the place where you are proud to hand it back to God. Like, what's the really important accomplishment? Right? And we do make choices about our accomplishments. You know, we choose to accomplish some things over other things, because of what's more important to us. So you might want to spend some time thinking about accomplishment. What does that mean? What's really important to me to accomplish? What about boredom? Boredom is also another one of the problems. So boredom because you're not doing enough stuff. So you might want to ask that lower soul, what's going on that you're bored? You're just sitting around? Is it because you don't like the services? Maybe you could figure out something besides the services. Maybe a study group Saturday mornings. Nobody says a woman has to go into services and pray. Guys, it's a different story. But for the women, you don't have to go into services. Maybe you'd like sitting around discussing the Parsha or something like that, right? So that you could talk to your lower soul about why it might enjoy being on the program with the higher soul, to raise the will of the lower soul so they're not struggling against each other, so that you're unifying the will so you can both go in the same direction. And you can spend some time in the hit bonenut that we talked about last week. That's really talking to your lower soul. Is that what's up with you? What's the boredom about? You know, so you're asking yourself that question, and then you say, "Well, do you think if I arrange a Parsha study group, or do you think if I find some good novels for you to read, or do you think if I whatever, you think you'll be more interested? Oh yeah, I think that sounds more interesting. Well, do you think we could work on this? That you're talking to it and trying to raise the will. You know, could we try this?" But you want to put some glasses on to see that, to let that lower soul see, actually, it will be a pleasure. Like, let's say, for instance, if I want to exercise, which I don't, right? I don't. But my higher soul says I should, right? So I have to, I'm working on this, but have not yet had this long conversation. If I will be able to convince my lower soul that actually it will be better for me if I exercise because my body won't get in the way later on as I get older. I won't be creaking as much. My joints will be more limber. I'll be able to reach for things. I'll have better balance. I'll have more strength. I'll be able to teach more Torah and learn more Torah. I'll last longer. And so it really pays for my lower soul to get on the program. Everything will feel better if I take the time to do what's inconvenient for me right now. And part of what's inconvenient is it gets in the way of my learning or teaching. Like, I don't want to do that because I have stuff to do, right? So I don't want to take that time. But to work on unifying those two things, you have to really figure out what is your desire, what's holding back your desire, what's the desire of the other thing, and how do you shift those two, and then try to have a picture of what it would be like. Take that time in the quiet moment to envision, what would my life be like if I exercise more? And see, oh, I would feel better. My breathing would be better. My posture would be better. Maybe I would be that size 12. I don't know. You know, whatever. I would have, there would be pleasures for the lower soul as well, not just for the higher soul. So to try to help them see that and unify those two things. So that is a technique of how we can make our future happen. Right? We have two options. Again, from today until after 120, let it happen or make it happen. And that's really what Musar study is about. It's about setting goals and accomplishing them. Now, setting goals and accomplishing them, if you want to make a change, you have to make a change. I didn't put the second half of the sentence. You can write that in on the front of your page. We did the introduction one. We did the introduction two. I didn't ask you about your homework, but probably we won't right now. Yeah. We did the timeline, and I told you that phrase, if you want to make a change, you have to make a change.
Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
So may I ask you, if there are certain situations where, for example, you are not really in charge of, you know, like your dream.
Mm-hmm.
If, let's say, again, it's real, like, let's say, you know, like, I want to move and live in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, like, I'm, you know, like, I have job here, I have, you know, like, this, and I have, like, older parents, and I have mm-hmm. children who are not moving, and mm-hmm. I have this and this, and you have a dream, but it is not really something you can do about that, but really it is something that is, like, a block.
Right. So that's an excellent question. And according to a Musar Vad that I'm in, when you get to that, when you've worked on identifying your desire, your will, your goal, and unifying it so that you really, really want it, and you hit a block, right? I have a job here. I don't speak the language there. My job, let's say for my husband, he's a lawyer, right? So it's a different kind of law in Israel, and he's not fluent in Hebrew. His Hebrew is pretty good, but his English is fabulous, right? He can't use Hebrew like he can use English to be able to...
Maybe he doesn't want to move.
Well, let's say he does. I'm saying let's say he does, right? So you've hit a wall. Right? You've hit a wall that you can't move your business so easily. You've got aging parents. You have kids who are finishing high school. Whatever it is, you've hit a wall, even though you really, really want it. When you get to that stage, so that's where my teacher teaches a technique called chutzpahdik masterminding. Right? Where you know, like, for whatever your dream is, you've got to figure out how you're going to break through that wall.
Your teacher?
Rabbi Niven, Aryeh Niven.
Not here.
Not here. Mm-mm. He's in Israel, in Ashdod. We have a telephone chabura and then a daily chavrusa to work on these principles that I'm part of. So, as a student. So that's when you get to chutzpahdik masterminding, where you just say, "How I have to figure out a way to make something really big happen." And you never know, once you put the question out there, you have to put the question out there. You know, I want to move to Israel with all my heart and soul. Is it all your heart and soul? I want to make Aliyah with all my heart and soul. I have parents here who are aging. I can't leave them. I don't know how to make a business. So you have to say, God, how can I get to Israel with my parents and an income? That's the question, really, right? Not, I can't go. How can I go with my parents and an income? You don't know. I mean, there's maybe different ways, but you have to start thinking the question if you really want it. It doesn't necessarily work for every single thing. Let's say I was just talking to somebody about somebody who's really having a hard time conceiving, right? So sometimes there are physical blocks that you can't fix, but sometimes you can. Sometimes there are physical blocks that with some work you could fix. Sometimes they're not, you know. So my son-in-law probably can't say right now, you know, I want to walk. too bad. You know, that's just not right now. But what do you want to do that you need to walk for? Maybe you can do that. So you have to start thinking about what can I accomplish from that. But you do want to unify your will. And if he has a strong desire to walk, so he's going to keep working in OT. You never know. You know, you never, and or working for cures, or hounding people, or legislation for that will bring more money into spinal cord care, development, or whatever it is. If you have a strong desire, so you could work on it. All right, so you have to ask, how's that going to happen?
Don't we have to be careful though that a lot of times, so you could want, and God says, no, you're
correct.
Here. Don't you have to be careful that you're not so caught up in that you forget why you're here?
Excellent question. So you want to make sure before you do chutzpahdik masterminding, I'm glad you asked that question, that what you want is the will of God. How do you know that what you want is the will of God? So you have your friend, your rabbi, and your student. It says in Pirkei Avos, you should make for yourself a rabbi or a teacher, right? Some teacher in your life that you have a connection with. You're supposed to have a friend, and you're supposed to have students. So that means you have a relationship that's above you, a relationship that's parallel to you, and a relationship that's below you, where all three of them help keep you in check, because they triangulate on you. When I was in New York, I used to read the Jewish Week, the Jerusalem Post, and Yeted Ne'aman. Three different Jewish papers, one from a secular New York point of view, one from an Israeli, mostly secular point of view, with a little bit of religious sprinklings in there, and a very right-wing religious newspaper. But it would be so interesting to see how each of the papers would cover the same issue. Right? Who is a Jew? Right? So it'd be just in the legislation that's being passed. So to see how those three sources triangulate on an issue. So to have that triangular circle around you helps you keep in check that what you want is really correct. So let's say what you want is, I don't know, to be a Broadway singer. Mm-hmm. Right? And you're thinking, how am I going to be a Broadway singer and Shomer Shabbos? I keep Shabbos, but I want to be a Broadway singer. Plus, there's a problem with a woman singing in front of men. How am I going to be a Broadway singer, Shomer Shabbos, and not sing in front of men? So, should I be chutzpahdik masterminding that? Or should I sit with a friend first and have them say, you're desiring the wrong thing. You know, that's not the right way to chutzpahdik mastermind that one. That's not a healthy desire to be a Broadway singer. That's not why you're here. Right? What is it that you desire? And then talk to your rabbi, your students, or your friend about that. What is it in there? What's that desire coming from? Is it from singing? Is it from performing? Is it from stardom? Is it from low self-esteem that you're looking for that for self-esteem? Do you need that? You know, what is it? And maybe you can get to what really your issue is. But that's not a healthy desire for somebody to chutzpahdik masterminding.
You've got to be real careful, especially the healthy ones. The unhealthy
right.
ones are easy. It's the healthy ones that you've got to really be careful with.
Right, so we are here for healthy, big things.
I know, but you got to be careful. Look, I want to live in Israel.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? God didn't give me the ability, the financial thing, the this, the that. So my whole life, I'm so stuck in living with Israel, I forget about raising my kids here.
Oh, no, so you can't do that.
Here and being everything I can here.
Right, no, you can't, leave this aside. Right, absolutely not. No, you have to be integrated. This is not, you know, I'm not giving you the whole entire roadmap here. You have to have areas of life balance and be constantly checking in with that. That's why in this chabura that I'm part of, it's an hour a week chabura and a daily contact 5 times a week, so commitment to 5 times a week, with your chavrusa to discuss these things. And then you can email the rabbi to check in on things too. But this is not just like nothing. And so Musar study, and that's why I wanted to bring out some of this stuff, Musar study is not just... It's not just theory. I felt like we were doing so much theory that maybe it wasn't getting practical. But I wanted to bring it to a place where this is practical. This is about growing and changing. This is about taking charge. This is about making your future happen, not letting your future happen to you. Who do you want to be? So in the section that we're going to look at today, that hopefully you have some of at home, and by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this book is out of print. So if you find one anywhere, buy it immediately. Even if you don't want it, just give it to me. I'll pay for it. But
it's out of print because they haven't gotten to a second printing. It's out of print because there wasn't a demand.
So Jewish books, basically, the definition of a successful Jewish book like this is you sold 2,000 copies. So 5,000 is wildly successful because our market is extremely small. So they often don't print 2,000 copies of a book to start. Maybe they'll print 1,000 copies. So, right, the demand has to build up before they're going to run it again. They probably will print it again. But right now it's out of print.
It's out of print because it was successful.
Right, right, right. It was successful. It's been snapped up. It's gone. So now what? Right? And so, and it can, sometimes it's 5 or more years before they print it again.
I'm trying to find it. I think I found one place in Canada.
Well, snap it up. So now, just so you all know, it's not easy to find. I've been looking around for it. And I would call any bookstore somewhere where they may have it on a shelf and just have them send it to you. And if they have two on the shelf, have them send both. I'll buy the second one because people want it. Right? So, and it's not easy to find. But in this, the chapter that we're going to read tonight, that we're going to look at tonight, is called The Desire for Change. So it's a pretty short chapter, chapter 4, and it's just about, it's about looking at yourself. It's just these few pages. About looking at yourself, and it talks about something that most of us, anyway, or I certainly, truthfully, haven't really come much into contact with. So it talks about looking at one's shortcomings and not getting depressed about it. So I personally haven't gotten depressed looking at my shortcomings, and maybe I should, but I can look at my shortcomings, but it doesn't engender a feeling of depression. For some people who are either very sensitive or have a tendency to be very hard on themselves, or who really see the distance between where they are and where they want to be, they might get depressed. That's not one of my tests. It's also not one of my tools, right? So you don't want to be so depressed that you're depressed. But sometimes it's good to have just a little angst because it pushes you to action. It's like guilt, you know, Jewish guilt. There is a place for it. Probably not a place for Jewish guilt. Just a place for some guilt in Jews. Because Jewish guilt is usually too much, right? So we only want enough that it moves us. And any amount that stymies us is too much. Right? So just, you just want just enough to keep you going in your process. But if you're feeling stymied, that's just too much.
Is that, it seems to me that that could be potentially a challenge to anybody doing Musser to try to beat yourself up too much, because you're doing a lot of introspection.
Yes.
And kind of looking at what your vulnerabilities are, and that, you know, even with a person who's got a lot of symptoms, kind of opens up some raw places.
Yes. Well, especially because today, as a generation, we don't have a very healthy self-esteem, most of us. So, I mean, most of us in this room are like Woody Allen kind of generation. So there's just the pathologies of who we are as a people, as a group, as individuals, family members. Like, there's all that stuff layered on us. And self-esteem is not the strongest in this generation. There's a lot of fake self-esteem, a lot of bravado out there. But truly feeling like you're worth something is a little further from us than we might like. So that brings us to an exercise. I did not write on your piece of paper because I didn't want you to see the first sentence. So on the back of your piece of paper, turn it over, please. And I'm going to say the beginning of the sentence, and I want you just not to think. Write the first two things that come to your mind. Okay? So open yourself. You're not analyzing this. It just comes to your mind. I would value myself more if I would value myself more if I...
And write it down.
Yeah, write it down. It's private. Nobody's looking at your papers. If it's too embarrassing, you don't have to write it. You could just think it, but...
Two things.
Could be one. One or two. Don't think about it. This is not for thinking. Don't start analyzing, well, really, what I should be valuing is... Good. Okay. All right, it's all right.
I want to be you.
I have very low expectations on it.
Okay, so if nothing comes to mind, either your self-esteem is great, everything's in check, or you don't think that you can achieve very much, so you've really settled. You know, or somewhere in between, but there's probably some other reasons, or you can't think of something right now. But what might help you value yourself more? So that's now I'm asking you to think, but you don't have to necessarily think about this. I would value myself more if I... Be with that question a little bit. Where would you get more self-esteem? Because self-esteem is based in self, right? I would value myself more if I... Not my friends would think I'm cooler if I, you know, what would I value myself more for? So something to think about. Here's your second sentence. Ready? Hashem would get more nachas from me if I...
if I valued myself.
Okay.
It's kind of an oxymoron. Hashem, how can I, you know, Hashem doesn't get nachas.
Well, is that the case? You know, we talk about Hashem getting nachas, actually. You hear, and you hear in almost, in all the frum bar mitzvah speeches, the boys say, and thank you to my parents, and, you know, I hope that I'll grow up, and my teachers, I hope that I'll grow up to give my rabbis and my parents and Hashem nachas. Right, so what is nachas? We know what nachas is, right? Nachas is that wonderful feeling you get from seeing the fruits of your labor do well. Right? So, Hashem, we are the fruits of Hashem's labor. He created us. Right, so what does Hashem want from us? He wants from us, bless you, like a parent wants from us. I mean, sometimes I use the analogy of playing piano, right? So why does a parent try to get their kid to practice piano? Right, it gives the parent nothing. It gives them a headache and it costs money. They schlep them back and forth to lessons. They're nagging the kid, right? What does the parent get out of it? Nothing, except for they're giving their child a gift that if they take enough time schlepping, and if they create the right kind of environment, whether it's through nagging or bargaining or whatever it is, but if they get the kid to practice enough, the kid grows up with a wonderful skill that's a pleasure to them, and they enjoy it. And once they acquire that skill, the parents get nachas. The parents feel the pleasure of their child's pleasure, that they're good at it. Why does so something you can think about mitzvahs in this way. Why does the parent want the child to come practice? When they say, come practice piano. So they do want them to follow their direction in the moment. But the bigger picture is not come sit at the bench right this very minute. The bigger picture is I want you to have a gift to develop yourself. I'm trying to help you develop yourself. I can see it now. I'm investing in it now so that you'll have this as a grown-up. You'll have this gift. The only way you can have it is if I arrange it for you and I push you to achieve it. That's the only way you get that present. Right? So when Hashem tells us to do a mitzvah, it's exactly the same thing. Yes, he wants us to come do it now, but it's not for him. You know, when we learn how to be a good person, it doesn't improve him. It's for us, but Hashem gets nachas from us. When we become more patient, more kind, more loving, more giving, give people the benefit of the doubt, whatever it is, as we grow ourselves, Hashem gets nachas out of that because we're accomplishing what he wants. He gave us the tests to do it. One of the frustrating spiritual conundrums is that, well, I'll say it in the non-frustrating way first, the more potential Hashem sees in us, the more opportunities he gives us to grow. Right? The more we accomplish, the more he offers us. Right? So that's the lovely way to look at it. The hard way to look at the exact same thing is the closer we get to God, sometimes the harder our life becomes. Because the more potential we have, the more opportunities for growth he gives us. So the more challenges arise, because we can accomplish more and we can become bigger and we can become even stronger and even smarter and even more capable. If we've taken that step, well, we could take another one. And once we took that one and we're stronger, well, we can take another one. So just like a mountain climber wants to start with a little hike and then work on the 14ers, but if he's not satisfied with that, he's hit all the 14ers in Colorado. So Everest, right? I mean, you wanna. So the person who's trying to accomplish sets their own goals, but Everest is much harder than one of the 14ers, and the 14ers are much harder than a hike in Estes Park, right? But why do you want to do it? The stronger you get, the more you want, because you get more geschmack out of the accomplishment of something bigger and stronger. But Hashem sees that in us too. You know, once you accomplish something, he wants you to work harder, accomplish more, become more. So he gives us more opportunities to grow. But it can feel hard sometimes. But the hard, the difficulty of it is because Hashem sees we have the potential. We can accomplish it. So he wants to draw out more and give us more opportunities. So sometimes the challenges are what we think of as challenges, and sometimes they're very subtle. You know, should we move or shouldn't we move? What if we move to a place where there's more of a Jewish community, the right kind for us? Let's say we don't live in Denver and we don't have the Eish Shul. We live in, I have a partner in Torah in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Right? So she's one of the few, she is one of the few people who can lead services in Hebrew. Only women can. No men can. At all, whatsoever, in the entire city. Right? And she is the only one who brings her children to services. So her kids are at services, three girls. There's nobody else for them. There's no Sunday school. Right? So now, but she has a job. Right? She's a nurse. So now she has to decide. Do I, her test might be, and I'm not saying her specifically, but a profile like that, right? Do I move and give up that job, my support system, for the sake of a richer Jewish life? Do I stay here and remain the teacher that I am in that community, right? Giving in that way, but then maybe my daughters are at risk, or are they at risk? Would they be more at risk in a bigger city where they'd get lost in a Jewish school? Those are challenges, right? And then once you make the decision one way or the other, there's other challenges that you face because of the decision that you made, right? Oh, now we move to the bigger place, and not everybody's so nice in the community, right? And I'm not a teacher anymore. Now I'm just one of the also-rans. You know, so so it really depends. Talking about Wyoming? Mm. Yeah, so those are all questions. So the more that we grow, the more Hashem offers us opportunities to grow. So let's say we do approach ourselves with a critical eye, and we feel like, oh, look, who am I really? You know, I have so many shortcomings. Where am I going to get the strength? So one of the questions he asks is, where will you get the wherewithal to work on yourself? So two important points. I'll read you this paragraph. The obvious question arises, from where do we garner the energy needed to shift to the seichel once our emotions have revealed a shortcoming and a distance from Torah? The key is twofold. First, we must realize that all the tools we need to improve are already within us. So that's an important concept. Everything we need, we have. Hashem set us up that way. If we don't have it, we don't need it. So if you're thinking, I can't accomplish that, I don't have the money, I don't have the husband, I don't have the learning, I don't have the whatever, then that's not your goal. Or there's a different way to accomplish it. But everything you need, you have. It might be the wherewithal to get some of the other things, but everything you need, you have. Second, we must understand that our negative traits do not define us. It is vital that we view our weaknesses in the proper light. These realizations should allow us to shift to our seichel for a proper evaluation of the situation. So first you want to do the emotional evaluation. What are you missing? Who do you want to be? How far away are you from that goal? But then shift to your seichel, not to stay in emotion and be depressed about it. Okay, so what are the traits that I have that need to be corrected in order for me to accomplish the things that I want to accomplish? And how am I going to accomplish that? Make your goals. Now, this is not a self-motivation seminar. If it was, I would tell you, set your goals, create steps to your goals, put assign a deadline to each one of those steps, you know, put it on your timeline. If you want to accomplish it, it has to be on your timeline, right? That's not this, because this is Musar, right? So that can be possible for certain things, depending on what some of your goals are. But if your goals are really working on yourself, and you might want to set a goal, you might want to try a date for becoming Shomer Shabbos or something like that, or whatever it is that you, if you have concrete, defined goals, and the goal should be more concrete than to be a good person, right? You might want to define that for you, because your to be a good person is different than the next person's to be a good person. What does that mean? How will you know you've achieved that or you are achieving that? And that bar actually should always be raising. The closer you get to it, the further away it should become, in a way. But in Musar work, it can take a very long time to accomplish goals. And it's 100% okay. We're supposed to ask ourselves, When will my actions reach those of my forefathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, or our foremothers, depending on our gender? This book is written for men. We are required to know our greatness and our potential. At our deepest core lies an insatiable desire for oneness with Torah and Hashem. So we are supposed to think in a great way, not when will I be a nicer person, when will I accomplish some small goal, when will I be great? It has to be a goal or you'll never achieve it, right? If your goal is just to be nice, great, so you'll accomplish nice. But if you really want to be great, if you want to step outside of yourself, be somebody really, so you have to set that as a goal. You can't achieve a goal that you don't set. So it doesn't have to be a pride-based greatness, or maybe it is. You know, maybe I want to be a great lecturer, a great author, a great whatever. Or maybe you want to be the great person that you can be. Who are you? How will you be great? It was interesting. I don't know if I should say this. Somebody that I was talking to talked to. I was mentioning a problem on one of the trips. You know, my other job, my day job, is to coach Rebbetzins in the field. So I travel and I meet them in their homes and in their synagogues, in their orbits, and I, going to their homes, I see what's happening in their homes. I'm there long enough. Sometimes I stay up late with them. The late hours are conducive to intimate conversation. That's when they might tell me about what's going on in their marriage, or they're worried about a child, or they're worried about their position, or whatever it is. So I'm willing to stay up late to hear those things and work with people and try to help them get the support that they need, or connect them with other people, give them advice, or just visit them. I just was on Victoria on Vancouver Island. It was beautiful. I got to see orcas next to the ferry. I was on there, and I met Rafi, my first celebrity. Yeah. Rafi, somebody introduced me. He said, "Oh, this is Rafi." I said, "Oh, nice to meet you." And they said, "Are you a BG?" And I'm thinking, BT, not BG. I said, "What's a BG?" They said, "Beluga graduate." And I'm thinking, "Oh, that must be like beluga, right?" And they said, "You know, beluga, Rafi." I'm like, "Oh, baby beluga, Rafi, you're Rafi." So I met Rafi. He's working. He's writing a blog, rafinews.com, about child honoring. I didn't read it yet, but I just met him, so it was interesting. Anyway, so I went to visit this rabbinic couple on Vancouver Island in their tiny little town. Saw their tiny little shul, which does not get a minion Saturday mornings, so they kind of do a led discussion-y prayer service, and then instead of Torah reading, they learn the parsha, a very nice way of leading it. So I learned a lot from the way the rabbi led it, and when I meet other rabbis, so I'll just tell them how he leads it and what it was like and what he brought out in the community, and that he didn't start with foregone conclusions. He really started with his own questions, and he led people to discuss those questions and brought some other points, but he didn't necessarily arrive at conclusions, and he didn't have a point he wanted to get to. The point was, really let people discuss the parsha and really help them with their own thoughts on the parsha. So that's what I do. I go visit these people. So anyway, one person was not doing well at all in a different city. Not at all. So I was reviewing this particular case with no names with one of my daughters who said, interestingly, she said, "That's the problem with synthetic leadership." And I was thinking, "What do you mean?" She said, "You know, because I am employed by an organization that trains couples in leadership and sends them out in the fields to your training program. Part-time, very part-time training program while they're learning in Israel." She said, "That's the problem with synthetic leadership. Taking people and training them and then calling them leaders and sending them into the field. So that's not how you get to be a leader. You have to get to be a leader by first building your marriage, building your life, building your parenting, building your learning. And you become a leader in an organic process. This is a synthetic process." And I thought, wow, I raised a smart kid. I never really thought about organic leadership and synthetic leadership. You know, and what the differences are there, and that's why there is more support needed. That's why I have this job, is because I'm supporting people who are trying to grow into leaders who were plunked into communities as leaders, who didn't necessarily grow into the position. They were educated into the position and plunked into the position, but they didn't actually like earn the position in a way, right? So So anyway, I forgot why I started talking about that, but the point is that we do have to, if we want to accomplish greatness, we have to set it as a goal, think about how we're going to accomplish it, and think, not how am I going to become the mensch next door, how am I going to become a great person? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, how will I become that? How will I become great?
I hate to disagree, but I think I need to become the best Jesse I can become.
Absolutely. No, you don't have to be Avraham. You have to be great like Avraham was great. Not that you have to be. You can be. Your potential is amazing.
I mean, but only with what I have.
Yes, but if you look in the mirror and say, Jesse, you're doing great. You are doing great. But if you look in the mirror and say, you know, at 50-something, I'm where I want to be. I am here. Then you are missing out on the next 40-plus years of your life to achieve greatness. Because you're just going to sit right where you are. So you have to understand that you have amazing potential and you haven't achieved it yet. And every step of potential that you achieve, your potential opens even more. So in achieving potential, you increase your potential. Every achievement opens up more. So you need to set a goal of amazingly fabulous so that you can achieve it. Otherwise, you'll just stay pretty fabulous. Right? So you want to be amazing. I want to be amazingly fabulous. I don't know if you do or not, but I have a goal of being amazingly fabulous, right? So amazingly fabulous for me is going to be non-judgmental, warm and caring, tolerant of other people, and yet still able to guide them in a gentle way towards seeing their goals and helping them achieve potential. Either slow to anger or doesn't anger, right? Learned, continues learning, prays with intention, organized, working on that. I bought a planner today. Working on the organized.
Getting into a size 12.
It's not on my list yet. It's a fantasy, but it's not strong enough that I'm even putting it on the list yet. Getting my books published. That's on the list. So I have to do that. So, but if I don't set it as a goal, right, if I don't put a date on it, so when is it going to happen? Now, so I'm putting a date on my books because that's a concrete goal that I want to achieve and I'm ready to have those two books done. I want to start on my third one already, but I have to finish those two. So, but for slow to anger, I can't put a date on that. And I can't put a date on tolerant and loving and guiding. Because I can't ever achieve. I can achieve what I see now, but once I get there, I'm going to see much more. So I can't put a date on that. So the question is, how do we move ourselves towards that? And can we even make a change? So we have, in this chapter, talks about learning Musar and doing Musar. Let's see if there I can find that, since we do have somebody following, which is great. Let's see. Okay, let's read this paragraph, which is the bottom of page 56. The concept beforehand is becoming sensitive to who we are, achieving some level of self-knowledge, which is further on in the book, so we're not talking about that. But once one becomes sensitive to who we are, then we have to actually commit ourselves to change, right? To know who we want to be, understand the distance of who we are and who we want to be, and how do we get there? Excuse me. So, reading straight out of the book, the second aspect of Limud HaMusar described here is to actually commit oneself to a specific change in behavior, albeit a small and incremental one, as Rav Yisrael stresses in numerous letters. We must emphasize that this latter aspect is not necessary in order to change or be affected by Limud HaMusar. So, even if you don't change your behavior, learning Musar can still change your innerness. So it can still change your concept of yourself. It can still change your antennas for how sensitive you are to yourself. It can still change your desire for who you want to be, even if you don't act on it. Learning can change those things. But acting is also important. True, the goal of Musar is to change our behavior and improve our connection to an observance of Torah. And true, Rav Yisrael stresses that Limud HaMusar is first and foremost a guide for our actions. However, the point is not necessarily to change specific behaviors. Rather, it is for us to become sensitive to our actions. Musar is realizing the way I should act and contrasting it with the way I do act. The commitment to change must be there, but the actual change is a very delicate issue. So in terms of, it is, does have to be taken in baby steps. We don't want to overwhelm ourselves with guilt or harsh judgment. So we do always want to be kind of in between. I learned from Tehillah Yeager, somewhere in between comfortable and overwhelmed. If you're comfortable, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. And if you're overwhelmed, absolutely too much. You have to be somewhere in between those two places. So not in a place of total comfort and definitely not overwhelmed. But giving yourself a gentle push. Gentle push. Because if you push too far, right, you're not going to accomplish it. So if I say to myself, I'm going to... Oh, so this is my exercise commitment for right now. And I've been doing this. When I'm in the airport, I don't take the people mover. I walk. Right? And so I am walking, and I think to myself, how pathetic is this that the exercise I get is walking through the airport? And yet, I do it. Right? I don't ride on the people mover. I do walk. And that it is actually kind of a long walk in a lot of airports, but I walk. So that is one tiny commitment I've made in behavior. I am not saying I'm going to take a walk every day. I am not working out and have not changed my caloric intake, but I have made a commitment to, in the airport, not riding on the people mover. So you can make tiny little changes. I hope that once I'm used to that, maybe I'll try something else. Who knows? But it doesn't have to be, I'm going to go to the gym and work out 5 days a week, because it's very easy to fall off of that. You want to put something in terms of your me dose, when you're working on me dose, when you're working on your character traits, something small that you can incorporate and make permanent. So we do want to have visions of greatness and tiny baby steps to get there. And it could take a long time. In this chapter, if you can, let's see, I just want to see which parts I want to read. Oh, it's too late. So I'm not reading anymore because time's really up. But let's just make sure that we finish our list here. Okay, so the energy for change, self-esteem. We want to have self-esteem, and so we want to think about where do I get my self-esteem? Is there something that would help me value myself more? Energy for change comes from understanding that the tools to change are already within us and that we're not defined by our negative traits. Those really are pathways for us to work on ourselves, but we're not defined by them. But those are our hills to climb. So how do we do it? First, we start with sensitivity to self, which is a long learning process. Who are we? Raise your antennas. Pay attention to yourself. How do you relate to people? How do you see yourself? And then we work on affecting a desire to change. Before we start changing, the desire to change. So visualizing, who do we want to be? And then seeing the distance between where I am and where I'd like to be. Right? So just appreciating, I have a goal. I'm not there yet. What is that distance to traverse? Allowing the inner change, which is just making space for it, that's different than fostering the inner change, being proactive about creating that change. But they both require some quiet time inside. And then making change manifest in behavior. So first you want to have the desire and then pick tiny little ways. And it might be in a year or five. Right? But you pick a tiny little way to start making your change manifest. And then I do have homework questions for you. So here are your homework questions. Who am I now? Who would I like to be? And how far apart are those two visions? Who am I now? Who would I like to be? And how far apart are those two visions? You could write about it, or you could just think about it, or you could talk to yourself out loud about it. In the car is a great time. Turn off the radio. Nobody else is there. People will think you're singing, or you're on your Bluetooth, right? So no, you don't have to be embarrassed in front of anybody. But talk to yourself. Who am I now? Flesh it out a little bit, and it'll just help you raise your antennas for who are you. You'll see yourself in different interactions. Maybe you think of yourself as pretty calm, but then you're going to notice during the day that you lose your temper a little more often than you actually thought you did. But by even saying that you're calm, you're going to start to pay attention to whether you are or not. It'll be confirmed or not. So you may want to change your understanding of who am I now? Who would I like to be? Talk it out a little bit. And it's not written in stone. It can change. And how far apart are those two visions? How can you move yourself? So that's another question. How can you move yourself? This week is just, who am I now? Who would I like to be? How far apart are those visions to think about? Okay.
years ago,